Why markets have had kind of a sad week. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. The week in markets, to summarize, was blah. The Dow lost 1.5% since Monday. The S&P's down almost as much. There's been a lot on investors' minds. Susan Schmidt is head of U.S. equities with Aviva Investors. She's here to help us unpack this week that was. Hey, Susan.
Good morning.
So what's behind this? Why are markets, why have they had a sad week?
Markets have had a sad week. So we're really seeing some pressure in the small cap stocks. That's evidenced by the Russell 2000 index. That's down almost 4% for the week. But the S&P and the NASDAQ are only down 1.5%. I think this really shows the fear of a slowdown in the economy. We've got news of the Delta variant spreading. We have concern over growth and inflation both going away. And at the same time, we've had some impact from the Fed minutes that came out this past Wednesday.
Right. The Fed said that basically there's this emerging consensus that they're going to stop purchasing as many treasuries to stimulate the economy. Why do businesses really care about that?
Well, they care for a couple of reasons, because it means that the Fed is going to withdraw some of its support from the market and interest rates are probably going to go up as a result. With that, you're going to have some concern that companies are going to be impacted, concerns about growth. Maybe things aren't going to be as great as estimates 2 months ago initially suggested. And we're seeing that reflected in the markets, particularly in those smaller companies.
All right. Susan Schmidt, head of U.S. equities with Aviva Investors. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
A lot of homes being sold out there are selling for more than their asking price. That is the reality in today's housing market. And there is one place in the U.S. where this phenomenon has blown up more than anywhere else, and that is Austin, Texas, which is coincidentally where Marketplace's Andy Euler lives. He took a look for us at what it is like to try and buy a house down there right now.
After about 9 months of house shopping in earnest, Jesse Robbins and his wife Hannah finally purchased their first home in South Central Austin in June.
You know, I was listed for $500, and we got $530. So I felt like I had the deal of the year.
$30,000 above asking price actually isn't that bad. Some 2,700 homes in Austin have sold for $100,000 or more above their listing price this year. That's according to the real estate brokerage Redfin. Daryl Fairweather is chief economist there. She says that disparity between list and sale price is due in large part to so many people buying from out of town.
The average out-of-towner had a budget of $852,500. And that was 32% higher than the locals.
She says remote workers are moving in droves to Austin from more expensive places like San Francisco and New York City. The median home price in the Austin area is now $575,000, up 30% over last year. In Austin, I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
Hundreds of thousands of Afghans have fled or are trying to flee their homes as the Taliban takes control of Afghanistan. The effort to evacuate them, to finance flights, coordinate visas, get them to the airport is both massive and frantic. For Afghans who have helped the United States in Afghanistan, the danger is particularly imminent. At least 300 Afghan interpreters and their family members have been killed even before the Taliban takeover, because of their association with the United States. That's according to nonprofit No One Left Behind. It helps Afghans who've worked with the U.S. secure visas and resettle. Matt Zeller is a co-founder of that group and an Afghanistan war veteran. He joins us. Good morning.
Morning. How are you?
What's the status of the evacuation effort right now? I mean, how many people have you gotten out? How many to go?
It's complete chaos. We're having reports of flights leaving Kabul half full, because we can't get people through the gates at the airport. I know that they're averaging something like a flight every 30 minutes is departing. But again, when they're not completely filled up, those are all seats that are just going unused.
Logistically speaking, I'm trying to understand the resources that it must take to move tens of thousands of people out. How do you do that? And how long would that take?
This is going to be more difficult than the evacuation of Saigon. You know, in Vietnam, we had boats and an ocean to work with. Here, everybody has to fly out, and we're trying to do it from an airport that has currently one active runway. So they have a major problem right now. It's not just the United States that's trying to fly all of its people out. It's the Brits, it's the French, it's the Canadians. There just isn't enough airspace for people to be able to effectively and efficiently get out with the limited time frame that we seem to have. And I know that it's not popular, but there's a bunch of airfields in Afghanistan that are currently sitting unused. Mazar-e-Sharif, Herat, Kandahar, Jalalabad, and most importantly, Bagram are all just sitting there and could be retaken within hours if the president of the United States would just simply give the order.
How are you financing this evacuation effort? Who's paying for it, and are there enough resources to do it?
I mean, in terms of the airlift right now, it's the American taxpayer. This is being done almost exclusively by the U.S. military. There have been a couple now charter flights that I've been told have been able to actually fly into Afghanistan, pick people up and leave. That private civilian fleet is being paid for just by about anybody you can imagine. We've lost count at the number of efforts that are out there that are trying to raise charter flight money for a plane here, a plane there. Many of them are in the millions. And there is an army exclusively being led by mostly veterans, but it's not just veterans, it's the frontline civilians, the diplomats and aid workers who worked with these people. We're all just putting our lives on hold to do whatever we can.
Matt Zeller is an Afghanistan war veteran who co-founded No One Left Behind, a nonprofit that helps Afghans who've worked with the U.S. secure visas and finance the resettlement process. Matt, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.